this life I lead. Well, I'd be Johnny Tomato Seed, 'cause I know what this country needs. It's homegrown tomatoes in every yard you see. When I die, don't bury me.
Okay, and we've got Master Gardener Ed Bajarski on the phone joining us. How are things going up in your neck of the woods, Ed?
Real good, Orin. Where's our music?
Oh, the listeners heard it. I didn't have the right button pressed. There, here you go. Did you hear it that time?
Oh, there we go. Okay.
Oh, false alarm. Oh, good. Well, how are things? What should we be focusing on in the gardens this week, Ed?
Well, trying to get in the ground. I seemed like last week I was saying, oh, I'm going to get all my tomatoes and cucumbers and other stuff in the ground. Well, it could happen any day now.
Right, right.
Well, this morning my wife and I were planting cabbages, broccoli, cauliflower, and immediately, as soon as we had them covered, or I should say as soon as we had them in the ground, watered them with some little bit of liquid fish fertilizer to give them a boost, and promptly got the remay, the horticultural fabric, on top. So all that right. It's a nasty root maggot. Who attack?
Nice, nice. So just didn't even leave any window open for those particular flies to attack your cabbage there?
No, not at all. And so that stuff is good. It's covered, and now we watch and wait and see what Mother Nature will do for us. The next thing... we have already been, hopefully, down in Petersburg, too. We've been harvesting rhubarb and admiring the rhubarb. And there's some local, actually, our local distillery had an ad on Facebook and Instagram that they're buying local rhubarb for use in their various fermentation projects that they have going.
Nice.
So rhubarb really is, this is the perfect time of year, of course, but it's still not too late if folks want to divide rhubarb too. Or if, you know, somebody says, hey, I've got some rhubarb, would you like some? And you don't have any. It can be divided quite nicely now. And just dig with a sharp shovel, take out part of the rhubarb clump that's there, backfill the hole with, well, if you've got it, horse manure or steer manure or other good rich stuff, and it will respond. And then the pieces that are taken out of there can be trimmed. You don't have to keep the long, sometimes you'll have 3-foot long roots attached. Don't have to keep all of that. You can trim those big fat storage roots down to 6 or 8 inches long, unless you've got a lot of space, and then get them replanted again. Replant them in very rich soil and dump on the manure on top. Now, with that, those pieces that have been newly planted, you normally won't be harvesting anything from those this year. You want those plants to grow and feed the roots, get a good root system, not unlike our fruit trees and other things, really. But the piece that was left behind can still be harvested from, so which is kind of an advantage there if this was in your own patch and you just wanted more of it. Otherwise, then next year, maybe about a half a harvest, and the year after that, you can usually get back to a full harvest of pulling the large stems and leaves attached as they grow more, you know. And again, it's kind of a balancing act. You don't want to clear cut them. You don't normally cut the whole thing down. You usually take 3 or 4 or 5 stems per plant and leave them to grow a while, and then you can do it again a week or 2 weeks later.
Right, right. Nice. Makes sense.
Watch also, I'm looking out more at my ornamental rhubarb, which is already sending up its flower stalks. The eating rhubarb is not. But normally we remove those flower stalks because we aren't getting any food from them. We don't want to, say, have seeds, or we're not breeding rhubarb, so we would want to hand pollinate seeds and grow them that way. Usually most rhubarb is propagated vegetatively. So remove those. And again, don't let them get too dry. Again, if we have some rain in the forecast, supposed to be a wet weekend, it appears, but we're enjoying what we have. But again, consistent moisture for those. Usually a well-established rhubarb plant has long, thick storage roots, but if you see them starting to wilt, certainly give them a shot of water. And consistent moisture, for most all of the plants. We talked a lot about watering last week, and I assume people were doing it, and then we got a really nice rain. We got 1/10 of an inch of rain here, which was sorely needed, and knocked the dust down, and of course, everything's growing really well, including the weeds.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it's been the same story here as far as that goes, for sure.
So then, you know, things I talked about last week, I was getting ready to plant the tomatoes. I'm still getting ready to plant tomatoes. It's going to happen. I'm planning to do that this weekend. And I finally started cucumbers, I think it was just before we talked last week. And they are looking beautiful. Cucumbers and zucchinis and a few winter squash. So those are going to go in the greenhouse also. And again, it's critical that we not let them get too large and too pot-bound. Or if they get stunted, and I've seen them where folks will sell plants, especially in a little 4-inch pot that has already got half a dozen roots and may even have a flower on it. I'm afraid those are probably fairly hopeless, that they're too large for the pot for that. So gently transplant those. Again, that's something that in the greenhouse, in the hoop house, wherever the zucchinis and cucumbers and tomatoes are going, we can mix in a little compost with a little bit of fertilizer underneath each plant to give them a boost, water them in with a dilute liquid fertilizer, whether that be a little bit of liquid fish or the weed juice or manure tea or other stuff, again, to give them a little bit of that first feeding for the tender young roots. And again, that stuff should be diluted. It should not be a full strength, whatever it says on the package, on the box, to use, but rather to use a smaller, more diluted half strength, even a quarter strength, potentially. Get them in the ground and get, at least for the tomatoes, well, and even for the other ones too, get them ready for, if you're going to be using tomato cages or tomato strings for the tomatoes or the cucumbers, it's good to put them in at the same time so that we minimize the later disturbance of the plants and the roots and all of that. So if we're going to use a wooden stake or something like that to tie the plants up to, put that in at the same time. So that's worthwhile. And then start looking at them. If your plants, mine are pretty good shape. They aren't overgrown for a change this year. But other years they have been. And I've had plants that have been 1 to 2 feet tall, and those I have to lay down and partially bury half or three quarters of the plant so that they'll root more. They were kept in too long and the weather wasn't right or whatever it was. Conditions weren't right for transplant. So this weekend should be just right. Get them in the ground and get them growing. Hopefully mine have been out in the greenhouse hardening off, so they're ready for that. And it should be good. I anticipate a good harvest this year.
Yeah, okay. So that's a good tip, I think, for folks who have been starting stuff inside and maybe haven't had a chance to transplant into their greenhouse or maybe even out into their beds. If something is a little bigger than you would have wanted to start to be, there are some ways you can plant it in that'll let it kind of establish roots a little better and not be too leggy and flimsy?
Very much so, yeah. And again, for tomato plants, no problem. They're one of the easiest things to transplant in that they can take that that extra length, extra burying. Cucumbers and zucchinis, you've got to be fairly careful about that. They're really tender. You've got to be very gentle with your transplanting of those. Now, the other thing that, well, again, I mentioned earlier, we had been planting out cabbages and broccoli and cauliflower. Those are another one that I do bury deeper because they will, and pinch off the lower leaves and get them buried in a bit deeper so that they can grow more roots off the sides of the stems, and that will be beneficial to those. So get them covered up. And because sometimes they get a bit, you know, again, if they've been leggy, if they've been indoors too long, not get quite as much light as they needed, they can get leggy. So that's important for support. Again, be gentle so you don't snap them off, of course. But they've been, might have been toughening up. So So now we'll wait and see. There's still more to be planted. I'm anticipating some more planting, and still I'm not there yet on the getting my carrots and beets in the ground. I do have some potatoes in, finally. So it's been doing too much shameless commerce here to get my own garden in the ground.
Well, it's good to hear that there's still time to make those moves.
It is. So, and again, then we start looking around the garden, maybe more around the ornamental garden, the flower gardens, and that stuff. Start thinking about some plants that can be divided or are going to be divided. I've still got a few hostas that need dividing. They're about 6 to 8 inches tall, some of the new growth is. Some of it is shorter, which kind of depends on varieties. So some of those, just like I talked about dividing rhubarb, we can do hostas the same way, with a sharp shovel down the middle of the plant. Seems a little ruthless, but it works, thankfully. Dig away that half, split the half in half, and then you've got some extras or to share with other folks. And again, backfill with good, rich soil. In some ways, we're growing them primarily for the leaves, kind of like we're doing for the rhubarb, although, we had our last program included talking about eating hosta sprouts, hosta shoots. Some of those new shoots that come up from the hosta when they're 3 to 6 inches tall, and they can be eaten, briefly steamed, boiled, prepared like asparagus with, of course, a little bit of garlic butter is always good. So it gives you kind of another way to use if you've got a really, really big hosta plant or patches of hostas.
Nice. That's cool. That's a nice way to make use of new shoots if you're dividing and replanting and, yeah.
Yeah, sometimes some break off. That's something that happens commonly enough. That will break some pieces off, but at least then those can be tried. So, and I would say, in general, when we're trying new foods, do it in moderation. Don't eat a great big meal of a whole pot full of hosta shoots. They are supposed to be edible. I have yet to try them, but I am planning to do so. And another one of those interesting, different edible, the lady was talking about edible flowers, and the hosta flowers are edible too. But using the first of the lilac flowers and making kind of a lilac flavored lemonade. And so I'm looking forward to that too from some of our lilacs here, which are probably a week or so away from it. I don't know if they're, are they blooming down in Petersburg yet? Getting close?
Yeah, certainly close. Yeah. I know of at least one big patch that's blooming. Yeah.
All right. So, again, that's something that you can take the flowers and use them in flavoring some lemonade. So you get, lilac has a nice scent. Some of that gets transferred to the liquid, the lemonade, or even a tea, again, as a very mild-flavored addition to some tea.
Nice. Oh, that sounds lovely. On a nice hot day after transplanting plants in the garden, little sip of lilac tea.
Yep, a little something different. So, and then the other thing I'm getting ready to plant too here, now that the soil is finally warming up in my hoop houses, green beans. Green beans and purple beans are going to be going in the ground. And again, usually what I do with those, I have a tendency, maybe others do too, but I have a tendency to plant them on the thick side, but I only plant half as many rows, and they're pretty easy to transplant. I don't pre-start my beans. Occasionally, I will soak them overnight, just soak the seeds overnight. And same thing with peas sometimes. So they pop up just a little bit quicker. But if I plant the beans, say, 2 or 3 inches apart, then after they are up, just barely starting to unfurl their first leaves, then I'll start to split them up and expand the patch. I've got rows. I usually do it in 4 foot long rows across a 4 foot wide bed or box. And so then I'll have more. I start out with maybe only 3 or 4 rows of a couple of varieties in the hoop house. And by the time I'm done, I've got 8 rows of each because I've been thinning and thinning and then transplanting those little bean plants. So again, it's a good way to do that. Beans do, yeah, I wouldn't recommend having them out in full open. They do like more heat, and they do like to be more dry. And I'll mention a couple of favorite varieties while I'm at it, which are usually or commonly available in seed racks, although they may be sold out by now, depending on what your conditions are like. But a good green bean is, a green bush bean is Provider. And a good, and actually a good purple one, which is Royal Burgundy or Royalty. So it has purple pods, which are kind of easier to find in, when you're searching, you know, searching underneath all that vegetation. But the two of those grow well side by side, mixed in together. And usually the other thing I'll do, once I get them planted and they just start to pop up out of the ground, I'll usually, in my hoop house, I'll have my pre-cut branches of alders, which will get stuck in between for some extra support. And so that's worth doing. Otherwise, you'll get this unruly mass of bean foliage, and it's really difficult to get through to be able to pick the beans out from that mass of foliage.
Mm, that makes sense. So one question that came up for me there was, you're talking about, so you've started from seed, your seeds start growing, and then you're going to be thinning out and potentially transplanting into less dense areas of your bed some of these kind of sprouts that you're thinning out. Like, are there any considerations that people want to have in mind when they're doing that process? Because a lot of folks probably out there, seeds that they've sown into their beds, into their containers, are starting to sprout. It's in the next, maybe this weekend or whenever it happens to be, people are needing to be doing some thinning probably. What are some of, top couple of things that you remind yourself of when you're out there thinning and potentially transplanting the pieces that you thin out?
Sure. So it kind of depends on the crop. So stuff that needs, usually on the seed packets, there's recommendations for spacing, how far apart they should be for a good growth. So, like for the cabbages and broccoli we planted this morning, we were spacing those about a foot apart. Now, other years, I will actually plant just a row of seeds of cabbages or broccoli. And then again, I'll take those, that'll be essentially a nursery row from which I'm digging them out and then moving them into, to expand into other beds. Maybe the other boxes aren't quite ready yet. So, but this particular box is already good for fertile soil, nice and warm. So that'll be my nursery bed in it for transplant. For things like beets or carrots, try to plant them thin as when you start out. Carrots do not transplant well. I mean, it seems like I always have patches where there's no carrots. You know, there'll be a stretch of 4 or 5 inches. Yep, no carrots there. Something didn't seem like I covered them too deeply, maybe, or they didn't grow for who knows, or I just missed it when I was sprinkling the seeds. That's where, particularly with carrots, are nice. So you can buy pelleted seed, which is a little larger. They've got a little clay coating on them, so they're easier to handle. So you can actually plant them individually, or if you've got a little hand seeder spreader outfit, you can spread them out to start with at 1 inch apart. And then, assuming you've got good germination, you'll be all good to go and don't have to come back and disturb them. Again, things like lettuce, you can certainly transplant quite nicely. And Swiss chard is another one that transplants quite nicely. I guess maybe as a general rule, the root crops don't move very well, but the leafy ones tend to be pretty easy to move. Again, with the beans or with peas is another one. You know, again, they suggest 2 to 4 inches apart. Well, just based on personal history, that if I've got them 2 inches apart, they are way too close, and it's going to be way too thick to be able to hardly reach a hand in to pick peas or beans. So if I start them out that thick, then I move them out. I just don't plant the whole box. I'll only plant kind of like nursery rows again. And then from there, those are the source for the next ones. And I don't see much difference in the final harvest time. It isn't like the last ones that I transplanted are going to be a week or 2 weeks later than the first ones that were not disturbed. So so it hasn't, that hasn't been a problem. Just, you know, use a trowel so you get, again, when they're, if you transplant when they're early, young, they don't have that larger root system. So you can get all of the root system, move them over, water them in, and stand back. And usually they will do quite well that way.
Do you just use regular water, or do you like to hit them with liquid fertilizer when you're transplanting from like a nursery row, as you're describing?
Oh, yeah, I do. Again, using the weed juice or fish emulsion or some other, or even Miracle-Gro, whatever it happens to be, diluted. And again, you're watering them in, firming them in the soil so the roots have good soil contact and moisture there, and so they can just take off and start growing. Hardly, again, if you do it at the right time, and again, that kind of takes some practice, but if I get the first leaves or a couple leaves on a bean plant, that's perfect timing. With your trowel, you can dig down. You get all the roots with them. You dig a hole the same size, plunk them in, water them in, and minimal transplant shock.
Nice.
Your plants are more difficult. The biggest problem with carrots, they transplant. I mean, they'll live fine, but they get really, it seems like they're always crooked if you're moving a little group of carrots, because they have that tap root where the beans have a more wider, fibrous root. It's hard to keep those carrot roots straight if you're, when you go to put them back in the ground.
Mm. Uh-huh. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Had never thought of that.
You know, so again, you know, if you're doing it yourself and you are in full control of what you're doing, again, I don't recommend the carrots, but I've had other folks tell me, I haven't transplanted beets. But there, again, they've got more of that round root rather than a really long root. Again, so they can tolerate it a little better, or so I am told. And of course, their close relative is Swiss chard, and that transplants just fine. We were planting a whole bunch of those today. We had them started, and so those are going to be going into the ground very shortly.
Hmm. Nice. Hmm, that sounds great. That's good. Yeah, that'll keep people nice and busy, I think.
Yeah. So yeah, and harvesting spinach. I mean, I've got it. I can see now we had spinach that I planted back in late February, March. It's starting to push. It's starting to bolt. So we're going to be eating spinach salad here for the next week or so, lots of it, and then it's going to come out because it's shading the. I had parsley went to seed in this one bed, and I've got parsley seedlings everywhere. So I'm going to be digging up and transplanting and probably potting up some parsley seedlings. But the spinach is shading out the parsley, so something's got to go. Something's got to be harvested to make room for the next crop.
Okay, that sounds good. So for you don't worry about kind of eating off the spinach and kind of keeping it going for a while. You're just kind of taking it out, eating it up, and then using that area to plant more.
Right, plant something else, because the spinach, planting at this time of year, it will almost instantly bolt because of the long daylight hours we have. So the next spinach crop won't be going in until August or so.
Right.
But there's plenty of other greens. I've got lettuce. We're ready to start eating lettuce that's looking really good. I mean, it's plenty big enough. So I'm thinning out lettuce plants. And that's some of that stuff that was in the greenhouse. It was planted back in March as soon as we got it covered. And so there I'm making room for the tomatoes to go in. So the ground doesn't stay empty for very long between April, you know, I try not to anyway, between April and October, shall we say.
Yeah.
You know, keep planting. Some folks will say, oh, but it's Memorial Weekend. Well, it's perfect time for planting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Nice. Well, we can kind of probably leave it there. I suppose everybody's going to be eating lots of rhubarb this weekend. What's your favorite rhubarb recipe that you're going to have this weekend with some of your current harvest?
So last night I made our second batch of rhubarb crisp. That's my favorite rhubarb thing, certainly. The previous time we didn't have that. The rhubarb was a little small, so I threw in some frozen black blueberries from last year, and that was really good too. So this one was a straight rhubarb, and you know, with an oatmeal and brown sugar and honey and all of that sort of thing. And I got to have ice cream, of course, to go with it. And we had some red snapper soup. So it was a great meal. Mm. And today I've already been back out and back with a friend, and we've got fresh Dungeness crab to go with fresh salad. So I'll be crab and salad and whatever else comes along.
Okay, that sounds good. All right. Well, I love this time of year when we're able to really start eating out of our gardens too. So it's just a real treat for the belly.
Indeed. Yep. And just keep on working on planning and planting, and we'll be eating well, hopefully into next year this time. Still have those garlic and carrots left from last year, so things are good.
Nice. Excellent. Ah, well, that is great. Lots of good stuff to think about, and always great to have these conversations with you, Ed. We'll leave it there, and we'll pick it up again next week.
All right. Thanks, Aaron.
Yeah, thank you. Good stuff. Okay. That was this week's In the Garden with Master Gardener Ed Byarski. We always appreciate his wisdom and expertise so much here Thursday afternoons on KFSK. And we want to thank the Flower Farm for helping underwrite this program. They're located out at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing, every day but Wednesday, 10 till 4. They offer delivery and also welcome shoppers with veggie and herb starts, hanging bags and baskets, bedding plants, trees, shrubs, and more. The Flower Farm, 772-3464. Stay tuned. High Country Music with playlists curated by Alec McMurrin is coming up next. Go out to eat, and that's for sure. But it's nothing the homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew. You can make your very own tomato juice. You can eat them with eggs, you can eat them with gravy. Eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on a side, put them in the middle. Put a homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'll life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy.